नारायणं नमस्कृत्यं नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयं उदीरये नश्च प्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तम श्लोके भक्ति भवती न श्री सो चैप्टर 4 लास्ट वीक सुदेवी माताजी शी स्टार्टेड फ्रॉम verse 1 to verse 13. She covered the first 13 verse in which essentially the sages asked some detailed questions regarding three topics. We'll see what those three topics were. And those three topics were regarding Vyasadev and regarding Sukadeva Goswami Maharaj and Parikshit Maharaj. So, in the first 13 verses, they asked detailed questions about Vyasadev, Parikshit Maharaj, and Sukadeva Goswami. So, verse 14 onwards, Srila Suta Goswami, he starts answering those questions. And he begins answering the questions about Srila Vyasadev. That's what he starts with. So if you see Bhagavatam, you know, it is in a sense, if you see, it's a narration which is narrated by Sukadeva Goswami. He spoke it to Parikshit Maharaj. So when that scene happened, actually there were question and answer. Parikshit Maharaj was asking questions and Sukadeva Goswami was replying. And in that assembly, Suta Goswami was also present. So now the same kinds of questions are being raised by Shaunaka Rishi and his team. He is the head of 10,000 disciples who are again the sages. So he is the head of all the sages and he is asking what happened there. And in the Bhagavatam which we are reading, it's a story within a story. It's a narration. A story within a story. Okay? So he is asking in this particular chapter, they asked about 13 questions and those questions particularly were concerning regarding Vyasadev, Sukadeva Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj. So, Suta Goswami begins 14th verse with the description of the appearance of Srila Vyasadeva. So, let's recite the verse. There are about 20 verses we are going to cover today. So, we will not be reciting all the verses except this first one. We will just go through the translation. Otherwise, it will be a tough job to finish 20 verses in an hour. So, 14th verse, Suta Vacha. द्वापरे संप्रदे संवरि विविप्त प्राप्ते द्वितया योगे पर्याय जात प्रसाद योगी सुत गोस्वामी सेड व्हेन द सेकंड मिलेनियम ओवरलैप्ड द थर्ड द ग्रेट सेज व्यासदेव वाज बोर्न टू पराशर इन द वूम ऑफ सत्यवती द डॉटर ऑफ वसु. So if you see in this diagram, Vyasadev, he is a son of Satyavati, mother Satyavati, and Parashar Rishi. He had a unique birth. He was born on an island. And mother Satyavati was daughter of a fisherman. His name was Vasu. Now what happened is, at that point of time, when she was helping Parashar Muni to cross the river, when they were in the middle of the river, Parashar Muni was a great rishi, so he could understand it is an exact time. Okay, can you reduce it maybe? He could understand that this is the exact time when the appearance of Vyasadev has to happen. So he requested Mother Satyavati that you become the mother of Vyasadev. And he explained who is Vyasadev. But she was confused, and he promised a couple of things, and one of the things he promised was she will remain virgin even after giving birth to Vyasadev. So finally she agreed and the birth of Vyasadev happened on an island. He created an island for her. That's why his name is Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas. Dvip. Dvip means island. So he created an island and he took a birth. So Vyasdev is a post. And his name is Krishna Dvaipayana. That is his name. So the appearance of Vyasdev happens on the third Sandhya. Now what is Sandhya? So if you see in one day of Brahma, this is the structure of the one day of Brahma. Most of us know it. So if we go to the last part, Divya Yug. Divya Yug means it's a cycle. Satyug, Treta, Dwapar and Kaliyug. This is one cycle. So in one Divya Yug, there are three Sandhyas. First Sandhya is here, second Sandhya, and this is the third Sandhya. So on the third Sandhya of the 28th cycle of 7th Manvantar, so this is the current Manvantar is Vaivashvata Manvantar. Right? So in, if you go back, you understand the concept of Divya Yug? So in, there are 71 Divya Yug in one Manvantar. One Manvantar is the ruling period of Manu. So there are 71 times the Divya Yug has to go to become one Manvantar. Right? And there are 14 Manus in one day of Brahma. So in a one day of Brahma, there are 14 Manvantar. So the current Manu is Vaivashvata Manu. So on the 28th Divya Yug of Vaivashvata Manu, so here if you see, these are 71, on the 28th cycle or 28th Divya Yug of the 7th Manvantar, there are 6 Manvantar over here. First Manu is Swayambhuva Manu, right? Then the second Manu is Savroschisha. So there are names are given. And on the right side, the future Manvantars or who Manus will be there, their names are also given. But the current Manu is Vaivashvata Manu. And on the 28th Divya Yug, at the third Sandhya, which is here, so if you go back, this is the third Sandhya. This is where Vyasdev appears. Now there is a particular alteration on the 28th cycle of the 7th Manvantar. And that alteration is given here by Srila Prabhupada. He is saying there is a chronological order of the four millenniums, namely Satya, Dwapar, Treta and Kali. So we know that it should be Satya, Treta, Dwapar and Kali. No, it is opposite actually. Okay, so I'll continue. So generally we hear that it's Satya Yug, then Treta, then Dwapar, then Kali Yug. Now we are in the alteration period actually. So in the alteration period it is Satya Yug, Treta, instead of, right now we are saying Satya Yug, Treta, Dwapar and Kali. But actually it is Satya Yug, Dwapar, Treta and then Kali Yug. Normally it is like that. Only in the 7th Manvantar 28th cycle, this is changed. Why? This is changed because it is time for Lord Krishna to appear in a Swayam Rupa. So in this particular cycle only, so basically once in a day of Brahma only, Lord Krishna comes as Lord Krishna himself. Otherwise he sends his representative. So basically one in 4.32 billion years, Lord Krishna comes himself. And we are very fortunate that we took birth in this time. So this is the importance of this particular age. Like Lord Krishna came himself 5,000 years back. And also followed by Lord Chaitanya himself. Otherwise Lord Chaitanya comes as Gaur Narayan, not Gauranga. Not as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he comes as Gaur Narayan. So the advantage of this is, if we are in this particular age and we know about this, then we have opportunity to go back to the Goloka Vrindavan. So it's a very rare opportunity. because now we are directly in association with Lord Chaitanya's disciples and his own disciples, and we have opportunity to go back to Lord Krishna's Golokadham. So that is what Prabhupada is explaining. But sometimes there is an overlapping. Due to this ring of Vaivasvata Manu, there was an overlapping of the 28th round of the 4 millenniums, and the 3rd millennium appeared prior to the 2nd. In that particular millennium, Lord Krishna also descends, and because of this, there was some particular alterations. So this is what the alteration is. So it is very important to understand this particular concept. Is this clear? Okay, we move forward. So, after the appearance of Srila Vyasadeva, you know, once he was sitting, he generally resides in Badrika Ashram. So, once upon a time, Vyasadeva, as the sun rose, took his morning ablutions, basically he was doing these rituals, in the water of the Saraswati and sat alone to concentrate. He was trying to concentrate. Then what happened? In his concentration, he saw the great sage Vyasadeva saw anomalies in the duties of millennium. This happens on the earth in different ages due to the unseen forces in the course of time. So Vyasadeva has certain benedictions, and one of the benedictions is Chiranjivi. Chiranjivi means he is eternal. Of course, we all are eternal in a way, but he is eternal in the own body. And Vyasadeva also has a facility there. He can see the past, present and future. So he could see the future, what is going to happen in Kali Yuga. And in his transcendental vision, he could see that in the Kali Yuga had so many problems. And what were the problems? He saw those problems as the power of all material objects deteriorates by the influence of time. The duration of the material body is reduced. Memories become short. Intelligence becomes meager. Land does not produce enough grains. Cow does not give as much milk. All living beings, both man and animals, do not have sumptuous, nourishing food. Very less production of vegetables and fruits. And the mutual dealings of are all full of hypocrisies. So these are all the good qualities in which we are living. And if you want to go in more details, you should go into Bhagavatam, 12th canto, 2nd chapter. And you will be surprised. I read it actually. I ask you to read again when you get chance. You'll be surprised and you'll see exactly those things are happening right now. So he could see that these things are going to happen in the future. The great sage, who was fully equipped in knowledge, could see through his transcendental vision the deterioration of everything material due to the influence of the age. He could also see the faithless people in general would be reduced in duration of life and would be impatient due to lack of goodness. Thus, he contemplated for the welfare of men in all status and orders of life. So being compassionate in nature, you know, he started thinking, how can I help these people? So that is the nature of Vaishnava. You know. He always thinks, how can I help who are fallen in condition and will be troubled so much. Now sometimes, you know, we also think that how can we help, but we don't have capacity. In this case, he had that. So whatever capacity we have, we should extend our help to the other people in whatever way we can. So here, in this case, Srila Vyasadeva, what he did, he saw that the sacrifices mentioned in the Vedas were the means by which the people's occupation could be purified, and to simplify the process, he divided the one Veda into 4 Vedas in order to expand them among men. So what he did, he knew about the Vedas. The Vedas were one in the beginning, and that was Yajurveda. So he thought, let me divide this one Veda based on sacrifices. So sacrifices are the ways by which the people can get elevated. This is basically 3rd chapter of Bhagavad Gita. The process of elevating somebody by the means of sacrifice. Now how does it work? So if you perform sacrifice, then what happens?
Yajna.
What is that verse?
Anna Dhavanti Bhutani. Parijanya Anna Sambhavaha Yajna Dhavanti Parijanya Yajna Karma
Sambhavaha. So that indicates that this, when you perform yajna to the demigods. So yajna means performance of sacrifice. So you want to get something. You want to achieve some material benefits. If you want to achieve that material benefits, why don't you go through us? Scripture gives some route. So why don't you use that route? So when you use that route, which is prescribed in the scripture, what happens is you are following the authority. So in this there are two benefits. Your material benefit is you achieve your material benefits, and the second thing is at the same time, because you are following the Vedas, you are spiritually elevating yourself gradually. So this is the benefit of sacrifice. So there are these prescriptions given in Vedas. So based on those prescriptions or prescriptions of sacrifices, he divided the Vedas from 1 to 4. So he divided the Yajur Veda into Rig, Sham, Yajur and Atharva. And he had this in the mind that he would give responsibility to different sages to expand them based on time, place and circumstances. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada is saying, as such, the Puranas and the Mahabharata were made from the related historical fact which explained the teachings of the four Vedas. There is no point in doubting the authority of the Puranas and the Mahabharata as the part and parcel of the Vedas. So Puranas and Mahabharatas are also part of the Vedas. And this is mentioned in the Vedas itself. In the Chandogya Upanishad 7.1.4, the Puranas and Mahabharata, generally known as histories, are mentioned as a fifth Veda. Now this can be a little bit confusing because Veda is coming prior to Mahabharata and the Itihasas which has happened. Means histories which are going to happen before that the Vedas have come. So how come we be part of Veda? Right. We can logically ask this question. But the sages had the power, and Vedas as such, we know that it is directly coming from the breathing of the Lord. So he knows what is going to happen. So he presented the Mahabharata and the Ramayana. Both of them are ithyas actually. We'll go in the further slide, we'll see that. In the Vedas itself, and we'll see why they put this as a part of the Vedas. So in Chandogya Upanishad 7.1.14, the Puranas and Mahabharata, generally known as the histories, are mentioned as the fifth Veda. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, that is the way of ascertaining the respective values of a revealed scripture. So Srila Jiva Goswami is saying that this is the way we know that this Mahabharata or other Itihasas, they are part of the, they are authentic in nature. Right. Because it is already given in the Vedas. So the authenticity of Mahabharata, Ramayana can be based on the, because it's a part of the Vedas, and it is given also in the other, it is mentioned in the other Upanishads. So this is how you understand that. Now Jiva Goswami was a connoisseur in Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is the fifth Veda we are describing. After that I will go to that point. So the fifth Veda is the Puranas and the Itihasas. Puranas has been further given to Romaharsana Suta for, actually it's Romaharsana. Suta is, Suta Goswami's father, his name is Romaharsana. So it was given to Romaharsana for expansion. And Itihasas contains two of Mahabharata and Ramayana, both are part of the Itihasas. Right, so we go to the next verse here. So I was talking about Jiva Goswami. So Jiva Goswami wrote many commentaries on Srimad Bhagavatam. One type of commentary he wrote is like what Srila Prabhupada wrote, verse by verse. Right? Other way he wrote is called as Sad Sandarbhas. Now we hear this Sad Sandarbhas many times, so I wanted to just clarify what it is. So that you understand next time you hear this word. Most of you might be knowing it already. So what is Sad Sandarbhas? Sad means six. Sandarbhas means it is the compilation of Jiva Goswami's based on the topic of Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? Originally, these sandarbhas were written by, as a notes, by Gopal Bhatta Goswami. So before leaving the body, Gopal Bhatta Goswami, he told Jiva Goswami that you make this sandarbha or whatever I have written based on the topic, you make it as a book, publish it as a book. So that's what he did. And he told him not to write his name. So he didn't write, but he wrote it indirectly. Anyway, so these six sandarbhas are the description of the Bhagavatam based on topics. So first one is called as Tattva Sandarbha. Second one is Bhagavat Sandarbha. Third one is Paramatma Sandarbha. Fourth one is Krishna Sandarbha. Fifth one is Bhakti Sandarbha and then Priti Sandarbha. So Tattva Sandarbha, in the Tattva Sandarbha, what he is doing is, he is proving that Srimad Bhagavatam is the topmost literature based on the tattvas. Now what is the tattva? He is using the tattva as pramanas. He is using the logic. He is giving logic and he is proving that among the different kind of pramanas. Pramanas means evidences. Shabda is the topmost. And among the shabda, Bhagavatam is the topmost. So he is using quotes from various books and he is proving that. So that is Tattva Sandarbha. Similarly, other sandarbhas you can read when you get chance what the other sandarbhas are. But these are basically the Bhagavatam in terms of different topics. And then he wrote one other sandarbha is called as Krishna Sandarbha. That is only on 10th chapter of 10th canto of Bhagavatam. So this is how he was expert. So he is saying in the Tattva Sandarbha that he is proving that how the fifth Veda is actually Mahabharata is a fifth, Mahabharata in the Itihasas and Ramayana is actually the fifth Veda, which is he is trying to prove from the different literatures. So after division of these Vedas, what he does, Vyasadeva assigns these Vedas to different rishis. So the Rig Veda is assigned to Paila Rishi, Sama Veda is assigned to Jaimini Rishi, Yajur Veda is assigned to Vaishampayana Rishi, and then later on, in the next verse, we'll see that Sumant Muni Angira has been assigned with the Atharva Veda. So let's read the translation of this verse. After the Vedas were divided into four divisions, Paila Rishi became the professor of Rig Veda, Jaimini the professor of Sama Veda, and Vaishampayana alone became glorified by the Yajur Veda. Now in this, the Prabhupada is saying, the original source of knowledge is Vedas. There are no branches of knowledge, either mundane or transcendental. This is very important. There are no branches of knowledge, either mundane or transcendental, which do not belong to the original text of the Vedas. They have simply been developed into different branches. So Vedas, anything which is, any kind of knowledge which we get, has to exist in the Vedas. Otherwise it's not the knowledge. So this is the conviction we should also develop, that it's very difficult, but we need to develop this, that anything which we are, any knowledge which we are coming across is actually coming from the Vedas. And these rishis, they develop these Vedas further based on time, place and circumstances, and this is now available to us. Mr. Sumant Muni Angira was very devotedly engaged and was entrusted with the Atharva Veda. And my father, Romaharshana, was entrusted with the Puranas and the historical record. So this is one which we saw earlier. The fifth Veda is Puranas and Itihas. And Puranas was entrusted to Suta Goswami's father, Romaharsana. And Itihas was entrusted to... Itihas is two parts, Mahabharata and Ramayana. Ramayana was done by Valmiki and Mahabharata was written by Vyasadeva. All these learned scholars, in their turn, rendered their entrusted Vedas unto the, their many disciples and grand disciples and great grand disciples, and thus the respective branches of the followers of the Vedas came into being. So then, this means that it was given to further given to the rishis for expansion, which we already saw. Thus, this great sage Vyasadeva, who was very kind to the ignorant masses, edited the Vedas so that they might be assimilated by less intellectual men. So, because he saw earlier, we see that, you know, he saw that there are anomalies in the duties of this particular millennium. So he divided the Vedas into one Veda into four Vedas, and then he made it accessible for the people of this generation, so they can understand it. So this people of our generation are considered as less intelligent, and we'll see why we are considered as less intelligent in future. So in this purport, Prabhupada is saying, it's a large one, the Veda is one, and the reason for its division in the many parts are explained herewith. The seed of all knowledge, or the Vedas, is not a subject matter which can be easily understood by an ordinary man. In Vedas, there are two kinds of verses. One is called as Laukika verses, another called as Alaukika verses. Now mostly the Veda, the composition of the Veda is Alaukika verses. So Alaukika verses is very, very cryptic. It's very tough to understand. Like for example, if you say Brahma Sutra or Vedanta Sutra, it's very, very tough to understand. The subject matter of the Vedanta Sutra or Brahma Sutra is same, because it's compiled by Vyasadeva himself. But it begins with Athato Brahma Jigyasa. That's where it begins. Athato Brahma Jigyasa. Now, this book is beginning with, Brahma Sutra is one of the most renowned books. It's beginning with, therefore. What is, any book have you seen that it begins with therefore? But this book begins with therefore. So it's a very cryptic book. It's very difficult. It's tough for us to understand this book. Right? So it is not for ordinary people. Vedas are not for ordinary people. Plus, 90% of the Veda is lost in this age. Only 10% existing. So let's assume that we have to understand Bhagavad Gita from 10% of whatever is left. Well, what are we going to understand? Nothing, actually. And let's say those 10% is first chapter. Then is only Arjuna asking questions, right? And we'll not understand anything, in fact. So that's how, you know, we cannot go into the Vedas and try to understand it. There is a stricture that no one should try to learn the Vedas who is not a qualified Brahmana. This stricture has been wrongly interpreted in so many ways. A class of men who claims Brahmanical qualifications simply by their birthright is in the family of Brahmanas, claim that the study of the Veda is a monopoly of the Brahmana caste only. So, you know, this is what's going on in India right now, you know. That, you know, there are families like Dwivedi, Trivedi, Chaturvedi, you know, something like that. So, their family, their ancestors, they were expert in Dvivedi, means expert in two Vedas. Trivedi, expert in three Vedas. Chaturvedi, expert in four Vedas. And we came up with one word called as Mishra. So this was our invention. Mishra means mixture, he knows everything. There are no Chakrabartis now. <It's gone. laughs> So they claim that whoever is born in Brahman family, they have rights to study the Vedas. But that is not the truth. Another section of people take this as an injustice to the member of other caste who do not happen to take birth in a Brahmana family. Both of them are misguided. The Vedas are subject matters which has to be explained even to Brahmaji by the Supreme Lord. So here Prabhupada is making a flow that, you know, both people. One people is saying that, you know, because I'm born in Brahmana, I have the rights to study or know this, or I know it because I've taken birth. And the other group in the other side, who are not Brahmanas, they are saying, okay, you cannot do that because it's injustice. So Prabhupada is saying both are wrong. And he's giving the reason that even Brahmaji has to be explained by the Lord. Therefore, the subject matter is understood by a person with exceptional qualities of goodness. Persons who are in the modes of passion and ignorance are unable to understand the subject matter of the Vedas. The ultimate goal of the Vedic knowledge is Shri Krishna, the personality of Godhead. Which verse from Bhagavad Gita?
The
sarve raham eva vedya vedantakrit veda videva cha aham. We move forward. So in the next verse, which is a very controversial verse in ISKCON, and the controversy is, Prabhupada is saying that the women are less intelligent, right? So here Prabhupada is trying to prove his points about this. Anyway, I'll read it. Out of compassion, the great sage thought it is wise that this would enable men to achieve the ultimate goal of life. Thus he compiled the great historical narration called Mahabharata for the woman laborer and the friends of the twice born. So this is also, this kind of description is also given in Srimad Bhagavad Gita. Right? Stri Shriddha.
Yeah.
What is the verse, Prabhu? Anyway, it's a similar notion. So the point over here is that Srila Vyasadeva is compiling Mahabharata for less intelligent people. Now, who is less intelligent? He is describing here. The less intelligent people are women, laborer, and the friends of the twice born. So I'll try to cover these three topics in detail. First one, the first topic Prabhupada is covering is the conception of samskara. Samskara means purificatory process. So the purificatory process is given in the Vedas, or also it is given in the Manuspriti. So there are 40 purificatory processes given, different processes for purification of soul, not the body. Of course, body also becomes a part of that. But it's generally the purification of soul. And that purification begins even before birth. So the first samskara is called as Garbhadan samskara. Garbha means womb. Dan means you are donating. Who is donating? The father is donating the living entity to the womb of the mother. So that is this samskara. The second samskara, there are like three samskara before the child is born. Or when this is before the child is born, this is when the child is in the womb of the mother. Then when the child takes birth, then there are these samskaras. Then he goes to school, then these are these sets of samskaras. And then marriage, and the final samskara is called as Antim Samskara. So these are the purificatory process. There are about 40. There are 16 major. This is directly from the Manuspriti. Generally we have heard about few of them. One is like, you know, Upanayanam. So people do Upanayanam. Then they do another one, they for sure do. There are a few exceptions, is Vivaha Samskara. So these are the samskara. Vivaha marriage is also a samskara actually. So somebody who has not gone through this samskara is called as Dvija Bandhu. So person who has taken birth as a Brahmana, Kshatriya or Vaishya or spiritually cultured family. Anybody who has taken a birth in those families, whose parents are well qualified, but their children have not gone through the samskara, then they are called as Dvija Bandhunam. Dvija means one who has gone through the sacrifices, is this side. Undergone purificatory process is Dvija, twice born. Why twice born? Because first birth is by the process of Garbhadan Sanskar, and second birth is the process of Upanayanam. That is the second birth. So that is why it is called as Dvija, twice born. So somebody who has been born in the Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya or spiritually cultural family and has undergone those samskara, then he is Dvija. And if he has not undergone this samskara, then he is Dvija Bandhu. These are important 2 points to remember. Now, Dvija Bandhus are categorized in the same level as women and Shudras. Yes.
So, women, you say only Vivaha Samskara, but they go through other things also. In your previous slide, you have Simantam, that's very common in Andhra.
Right. Then, but that is for the child.
Go back to the previous slide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it says protection of the mother.
Protection of the mother before child.
So, that's also for the mother.
But, yeah. So you are right in this way. So I have to research properly. Because this is one which slide. Yeah, you're right. Yes. So, but in Prabhupada's book, it is given that they have to only go through this one. So probably I'll research. I'll ask Kailas Prabhu and get back to him on this. So Dvija Bandhu, women and Sudras, they are in the same level because they are not spiritually qualified. Okay? And for them, the Mahabharata has been composed. The Mahabharata was written for them. For the Dvijabandhus, women and Sudra. So we actually all fall in the same category. Because none of us has gone through those purificatory process. Anybody, have you known anybody? I have not found a single person till now who has gone through these processes. So for them, Vyasadeva wrote Mahabharata. And in Mahabharata, all the purpose of Veda is there in a story form. So whatever lessons we have to learn from the Vedas, that is already there in the Mahabharata. So you don't have to read the Vedas. And on top of it, you have Bhagavad Gita in the Mahabharata, which is the condensed form of essence of the all Vedas in one book in 700 verses. So Srila Prabhupada is saying that this is the first book of spiritual value. Which is the first book? Mahabharata and Bhagavad Gita. And when you are thorough in understanding of this, then you have to study Vedanta, which is a postgraduate study. And when you finish Vedanta, then you are eligible to do devotional service. So how fortunate we are that we took the birth when Lord Chaitanya came. So he is saying, just forget everything, do devotional service. Yeah. So that is a mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Is it clear? Samskara is clear. Then Dvija Bandhu, friends of the twice born. And third, the purpose of writing Mahabharata. So this is what is explained by Vyasadeva in this particular verse.
So one question.
Yes.
So if somebody has undergone all the
So here onwards, this verse onwards, a thread starts, a thread of verses. And that thread is that Vyasadeva, after compiling all this, he is still dissatisfied. After writing all these Vedas, after distributing all this work, after doing such a great work, he is still dissatisfied. And what is the reason of his dissatisfaction is given here. So, O twice born Brahmanas, still his mind, his means Vyasadeva's mind, was not satisfied, although he engaged himself in the working for the total welfare of all the people. So Sri Vyasadeva was not satisfied with himself, although he had prepared literature of Vedic values for all around welfare of the general mass of people. It was expected that he would be satisfied by all such activities, but ultimately he was not satisfied. Thus the sage begin dissatisfied at the heart, at once began to reflect, because he knew the essence of religion. He said within himself. So he is trying to contemplate. After, you know, generally when we do something, we generally contemplate. Are we satisfied? Are we happy? You know, by doing this work. You know, you feel that. Like, a lot of us, we do duty service. And after we come out, you know, we feel fully satisfied. We have that experience. So similarly, Vyasadeva, you know, after doing all this work, he was trying to contemplate that I have done this work, am I satisfied? And being a transcendental person, he could understand very easily that he is not satisfied, even though he has done such a great work. And because he knew the essence of all the religion, he knew that something is missing in his compilations. So Prabhupada is saying, the perfection is never attained until one is satisfied at heart. This satisfaction of heart has to be searched out beyond matter. So Prabhupada is giving a hint why he was not satisfied. Because in the Vedas, what did he do? As we saw earlier, in the Vedas, he was describing about the sacrifices as the means of mitigating your troubles or material desires. But he is not actually describing about the Supreme Lord in details as much required. So that is what Prabhupada is saying. Perfection is never attained until one is satisfied at heart. Secondly, he is saying this satisfaction of heart has to be searched beyond matter. So whatever he has described in the Vedas is within matter. In Bhagavad Gita also Krishna is saying, Traigunya Vishaya Veda Nistraigunya Bhava Arjuna. Traigunya Vishaya Veda. The subject matter of the Vedas is within the three modes of material nature. Traigunya Vishaya Veda. And he is asking Arjuna, Nistraigunya Bhava Arjuna. You rise above these three modes. So same thing. And he is still contemplating. I have, under strict disciplinary vows, unpretentiously, means not falsely, worship the Vedas, the spiritual master and the altar of the sacrifice. I have also abided by the rulings and have shown the import of disciplic succession to the explanation of Mahabharata, by which even women, Shudras and others, friends of twice born, can see the path of religion. I am feeling incomplete, though I have myself, I am fully equipped with everything required by the Vedas. So he had the full knowledge, but he is still feeling empty. Prabhupada is saying, purification of the living being submerged in the matter is made possible by the prescribed activities in the Vedas. But the ultimate achievement is different. I'll read it again. Purification of the living being submerged in the matter is made possible by the prescribed activities in the Veda. So basically, Vedas give the prescription by which our material desires can be satisfied. But the ultimate achievement is different. Ultimate achievement is beyond the matter. Unless it is attained, the living being, even though fully equipped, cannot be situated in the transcendentally normal stage. So until we raise above the material platform and go to the spiritual platform, until we raise above and go there, we will not be satisfied. And then Vyasadeva is thinking, this may be because I did not specifically point out devotional service of the Lord, which is dear both to the perfect being and to the infallible Lord. So now, because he is transcendental person, he could identify the reason of being dissatisfied. So he thinks within himself that since I have not described about the Lord enough, that's why I think I am feeling dissatisfied. So Prabhupada is saying, dissatisfaction which is being felt by Srila Vyasadeva is expressed here in his own words. This was felt for the normal condition of the living being in the devotional service of the Lord. Because he didn't describe the devotional service of the Lord, he is feeling dissatisfied. Unless one is fixed in the normal condition of service, so he is talking about the soul, the service at the soul level, which is transcendental loving service to the Lord. Neither the Lord nor the living being can be fully satisfied. So this satisfaction is not possible if we are not serving the Lord. In this case, Srila Vyasadeva has not defined. He has defined to some extent. Like if you see, Vedas have three sections: Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda, and Upasana Kanda. So 96%, right? If I'm not wrong, 96% of the Vedas is basically Karma Kanda. And then some portion is Jnana Kanda and some portion is Upasana Kanda. So very less description of the Lord is given. In fact, Gurijan Prabhu is saying that it is a means of confusing people. So if you see in the next chapter, chapter 5, when Lord Naradev comes, you know, he explains that actually you have done a disservice to the people by giving. In a way, you know, because he is describing all the things which is not necessary. Right? Because people want shortcuts. Generally people look for shortcuts. And most of us are interested in material desire. And those things are already given in the Vedas, you know, in abundance. So we will stick to that only, we will not raise above that. So that is why he is saying that you have done a you have done a work which is actually going to confuse people. So that's why he asked him to write Bhagavatam or narrate Bhagavatam. So how do we get complete satisfaction of heart? So if you see, there are six questions which was asked by the sages in the beginning in chapter 3. What was the first question? What is the ultimate benefit of the living entity, right? And the answer to which is coming in the chapter 2, verse 6. Savaya pumsam paro dharmo yato bhakti radokshache ahaituki apratihata atma suprasidati. So suprasidati or suprasanna means complete satisfaction. So in that particular verse, Sudha Goswami or Sukhdev Goswami is answering that the paro dharma of the living entity is yato bhakti, is a bhakti, transcendental loving service unto the Lord, which is devoid of two things, ahaituki and apratihata. So loving devotional service of the Lord unto the Supreme Lord, which is devoid of, which is unmotivational or causeless and uninterrupted. If these services are these two kinds, these are the two conditions they have to met. And if you do such kind of service, devotional service to the Lord, then what is the result? Complete satisfaction of the heart. Right? Now here that he is dissatisfied. And see, these two things are matching now. So this is a flow, this is a whole flow, that why he is dissatisfied? Because he has not described the Lord enough. And he has described to some extent, but he has not given the complete description about the transcendental pastime of the Lord. And because of that, he has not done that. Even a person of Vyasadeva's level is dissatisfied. See? But here you have to understand in a different way. In the next verse it is shown that, as mentioned before, Narada reaches... Okay, so what happens is when Vyasadeva is thinking about this and he comes to that conclusion that I am dissatisfied because I have not described the Lord enough. And when he was contemplating on that, at the same time, Naradaji appeared. He appeared on the scene. So, as mentioned before, Narada reached the cottage of Krishna, Dvaipayana Vyas on the bank of Saraswati, just as Vyasadeva was regretting his defects. At that same time, his spiritual master came. Such a nice thing actually. Yeah. Let's say we are, you know, completely dejected and sitting in a morose condition. And let's say our spiritual master comes for help. How blissful we'll be. So in this verse, Prabhupada is explaining, although Vyasadeva was an empowered divinity, he still felt dissatisfaction because in none of his works were the transcendental activities of the Lord were properly explained. The inspiration was infused by Sri Krishna directly in the heart of Vyasadeva, and thus he felt vacuum as explained above. So we have to understand in this way, that this was done by Lord Krishna himself. That was Lord Krishna's plan. But in at the same time, you need to understand that the dissatisfaction can be also felt by somebody who is at the platform of Srila Vyasadeva. So if we do not perform the transcendental loving service of the Lord in a proper way, what are the two conditions? Ahetuki and apratyata. Then we will always be dissatisfied. So as a devotee, you know, when we are doing service, we must remember these two things. Our service must be ahetuki, no conditions, and uninterrupted all the time. Performing service. Service should not become botheration. As soon as your service becomes botheration, all kinds of problems will start. If you see service as botheration, the problems will be there and you will not be able to perform the service. So as soon as Vyasadeva comes, Naradeva comes, immediately Vyasadeva gets up and he receives him. Now this is a tradition in India. Now, anyone knows the reason behind this? As soon as we see somebody senior to us, coded in our gene. As soon as we see somebody senior coming, you know, we just get up. And we should get up technically and receive that person. The reason is, it's given in Manuspriti, that as soon as somebody senior coming in front of you, your life air goes up. So in order to catch that life air, you have to get up. So that is given in the Manuspriti. So this is how, this is the scientific reason. But at the same time, you know, Vyasadeva wanted to receive Narada. Who is Narada? He is a transcendental spaceman, right? He is the disciple of Brahmaji. And he is guru of Vyasadeva. So in all circumstances, he is a very superior person. As the auspicious arrival of Sri Narada, Sri Vyasadeva got up respectfully and worshipped him, giving him veneration equal to that given to Brahmaji, the creator. So he gave the respect to Naradaji as same as Brahmaji. This is what we have to learn, that we have to respect the acharyas or our Guru Maharaj, because they are representing the Lord. So the equal respect has to be given as the Lord himself. So Vyasadeva immediately get up to worship Narada Muni with great veneration equal to that of Brahmaji, the creator. Brahma, the first student and the professor of Vedas, learned the transcendental science from Krishna and taught it to Narada. And Narada in turn is a representative of Brahma, and therefore he respected him as good as Brahma. This is the way to honor the representative in parampara, of the parampara. So that is how we respect our Guru Maharaj. Or any spiritually elevated person. So with this, we are at the end of the 20 verses. So less than 1 hour. And we'll go through the summary. The first verse, the 14th verse, is saying Suta Goswami begins answering the Shonakresi's question by beginning with the pastimes of the appearance of Srila Vyasadeva. 15 to 18 is describing Vyasadeva sees anomalies in the duties of the millennium, in the age of Kali. What are the problems? What are the issues that people are going to face? In 19 to 25, Vyasadeva, being compassionate, contemplates how to help. He thought about this sacrifice and can be the means of purification. Hence he divided one Veda into four Vedas for further expansions by various sages, their disciples and their grand disciples. Also wrote Mahabharata for less intelligent class of people. On 26 to 31, Vyasadeva, feeling dissatisfied even after compiling such a great work, he contemplates for the reason of not having complete satisfaction, which he concludes that he did not specifically point out the devotional service of the Lord in details. And finally, last two words, as Srila Vyasadeva was regretting his defects, Sri Narad Muni arrived at the scene and Srila Vyasadeva got up to receive him. Normally when Srila Prabhupada would ask this question, what is the difficulty to his disciples, they will not have any difficulty. But because I am there, you will definitely have some difficulty.